Chapter 27. For the second time that day, Vaughn gave up her pickup truck and walked home to get her cruiser. Reacher drove the truck to a quiet side street and parked facing north in the shadow of a tree and watched the traffic on First Street directly ahead of him. He had a limited field of view, but there wasn't much to see anyway. Whole 10-minute periods passed without visible activity. Not surprising. Residents returning from the Kansas direction would have peeled off into town down earlier streets, and no one in their right mind was returning from despair, or heading there. The daylight was fading fast. The world was going gray and still. The clock in Reacher's head was ticking around relentlessly. When it hit 6:32, he saw an old crew cab pickup truck flash through his field of vision, moving smartly from the despair direction. A driver and three passengers inside. Big men close together. They filled the cramped quarters shoulder to shoulder. Reacher recognized the truck. He recognized the driver. He recognized the passengers. The despair deputies. Right on time. He paused a beat and started the old Chevy's engine and moved off the curb. He eased north to First Street and turned left. Checked his mirror. The old crew cab was already 100 yards behind him, moving away in the opposite direction, slowing down and getting ready to turn. The road ahead was empty. He passed the hardware store and hit the gas and forced the old truck up to 60 miles an hour. 5 minutes later, he thumped over the expansion joint and settled into a noisy cruise west. 12 miles later, he coasted past the vacant lot and the shuttered motor court and the gas station and the household goods store, and then he turned left into Despair's downtown maze. First port of call was the police station. He wanted to be sure that no miraculous recoveries had been made and that no replacement personnel had been provided. They hadn't, and they hadn't. The place was dark inside and quiet outside. No lights, no activity. There were no cars at the curb. No stand-in state police cruisers, no newly deputized pickup trucks, no plain sedans with temporary police signs stickered on their doors. Nothing. Just silence. Reacher smiled. Open season and lawless, he thought, like a bleak view of the future in a movie. The way he liked it. He U-turned through the empty diagonal parking slots and headed back toward the rooming house. He parked on the curb out front and killed the motor and wound the window down. Heard a single aero engine in the far distance climbing hard. 7 o'clock in the evening. The Cessna or the Beach or the Piper taking off again. You should ask yourself why that plane flies every night, the motel clerk had said. Maybe I will. Reacher thought. One day. He climbed out of the truck. The rooming house was built of dull brick on a corner lot. 3 stories high, narrow windows, flat roof, 4 stone steps up to a doorway set off-center in the facade. There was a wooden board on the wall next to the door, under a swan-neck lamp with a dim bulb. The board had been painted maroon way back in its history, and the words, "Rooms to Rent," had been lettered in white over the maroon by a careful amateur. A plain and to-the-point announcement. Not the kind of place Reacher favored. Such establishments implied residency for longer periods than he was interested in. Generally, they rented by the week and had electric cooking rings in the rooms. Practically the same thing as setting up housekeeping. He went up the stone steps and pushed the front door. It was open. Behind it was a square hallway with a brown linoleum floor and a steep staircase on the right. The walls were painted brown with some kind of a trick effect that matched the swirls in the linoleum. A bare bulb was burning dimly a foot below the ceiling. The air smelled of dust and cabbage. There were 4 interior doors, all dull green, all closed. 2 were in back and 2 were in front. 1 at the foot of the staircase, and the other directly opposite it, across the hallway. two front rooms, one of which would house the owner or the super. In Reacher's experience, the owner or the super always chose a ground floor room at the front to monitor entrances and exits. Entrances and exits were very important to owners and supers. Unauthorized guests and multiple occupancies were to be discouraged, and tenants had been known to try to sneak out quietly just before final payment of long overdue rent had been promised. He opted to start with the door at the foot of the staircase. Better surveillance potential. He knocked and waited. A long moment later, the door opened and revealed a thin man in a white shirt and a black tie. The guy was close to 70 years old, and his hair was the same color as his shirt. The shirt wasn't clean. Neither was the tie, but it had been carefully knotted.
"Help you?"
the old guy said. "Is this your place?" Reacher asked. The old guy nodded.
"And my mother's before me, in the family for close to 50 years.
"I'm looking for a friend of mine," Reacher said. "From California. I heard he was staying here." No reply from the old man. "Young guy?" Reacher said. "Maybe 20, very big, tan with short hair."
"Nobody like that here."
"You sure?"
"Nobody here at all."
"He was seen stepping out your door this afternoon."
"Maybe he was visiting."
"Visiting who, if there's nobody here at all?"
"Visiting me,"
the old man said. "Did he visit you?"
"I don't know. I was out. Maybe he knocked on my door and got no reply and left again."
"Why would he have been knocking on your door?" The old guy thought for a moment, then said,
"Maybe he was at the hotel and wanted to economize. Maybe he had heard the rates were cheaper here."
"What about another guy? Shorter, wiry, about the same age?"
"No guys here at all, big or small."
"You sure?"
"It's my house. I know who's in it."
"How long has it been empty?"
"It's not empty. I live here."
"How long since you had tenants?" The old guy thought for another moment and said,
"A long time."
"How long?"
"Years."
"So how do you make a living?"
"I don't."
"You own this place?"
"I rent it, like my mother did, close to 50 years.
Reacher said, "Can I see the rooms?"
"Which rooms?"
"All of them."
"Why?"
"Because I don't believe you. I think there are people here."
"You think I'm lying?"
"I'm a suspicious person."
"I should call the police."
"Go right ahead." The old guy stepped away into the gloom and picked up a phone. Reacher crossed the hallway and tried the opposite door. It was locked. He walked back and the old guy said,
"There was no answer at the police station."
"So, it's just you and me," Reacher said. "Better that you lend me your passkey. Save yourself some repair work later with the door locks." The old guy bowed to the inevitable. He took a key from his pocket and handed it over. It was a worn brass item with a length of furred string tied through the hole. The string had an old metal eyelet on it, as if the eyelet was all that was left of a paper label. There were 3 guest rooms on the ground floor, 4 on the second and 4 on the third. All 11 were identical. All 11 were empty. Each room had a narrow iron cot against one wall. The cots were like something from an old-fashioned fever hospital or an army barracks. The sheets had been washed so many times they were almost transparent. The blankets had started out thick and rough and had worn thin and smooth. Opposite the beds were chests of drawers and freestanding towel racks. The towels were as thin as the sheets. Near the ends of the beds were pine kitchen tables with 2-ring electric burners plugged into outlets with frayed old cords. At the ends of the hallways on each of the floors were shared bathrooms, tiled black and white, with iron clawfoot tubs and toilets with cisterns mounted high on the walls. Basic accommodations, for sure. But they were in good order and beautifully kept. The bathroom fitments were stained with age, but not with dirt. The floors were swept shiny. The beds were made tight. A dropped quarter would have bounced 2 feet off the blankets. The towels on the racks were folded precisely and perfectly aligned. The electric burners were immaculately clean. No crumbs, no spills, no dried splashes of bottled sauce. Reacher checked everywhere, and then stood in the doorway of each room before leaving it, smelling the air and listening for echoes of recent hasty departures. He found nothing and sensed nothing 11 times over. So he headed back downstairs and returned the key and apologized to the old guy. Then he asked, "Is there an ambulance service in town?" The old guy asked,
"Are you injured?"
"Suppose I was, who would come for me?"
"How bad?"
"Suppose I couldn't walk. Suppose I needed a stretcher." The old man said,
"There's a first aid station up at the plant, and an infirmary, in case a guy gets hurt on the job. They have a vehicle. They have a stretcher."
"Thanks," Reacher said. He drove Vaughn's old Chevy on down the street, paused for a moment in front of the storefront church. It had a painted sign running the whole width of the building, "Congregation of the End Times." In one window it had a poster written in the same way that a supermarket would advertise brisket for $3 a pound. "The time is at hand," a quotation from the Book of Revelation, chapter 1, verse 3. Reacher recognized it. The other window had a similar poster, "The end is near." Inside, the place was as dark and gloomy as its exterior messages. Rows of metal chairs, a wood floor, a low stage, a podium. More posters, each one predicting with confident aplomb that the clock was ticking. Reacher read them all and then drove on to the hotel. It was dark when he got there. He remembered the place from earlier daytime sightings as looking dowdy and faded, and by night it looked worse. It could have been an old city prison in Prague, maybe, or Warsaw or Leningrad. The walls were featureless, and the windows were blank and unlit. Inside, it had an empty and unappealing dining room on the left and a deserted bar on the right. Dead ahead in the lobby was a deserted reception desk. Behind the reception desk was a small, sway-backed version of a grand staircase. It was covered with matted carpet. There was no elevator. Hotels were required by state and federal laws and private insurance to maintain accurate guest records. In case of a fire or an earthquake or a tornado, it was in everyone's interest to know who was resident in the building and who wasn't. Therefore, Reacher had learned a long time ago that when searching a hotel, the place to start was with the register, which over the years had become increasingly difficult with computers. There were all kinds of function keys to hit and passwords to discover. But despair as a whole was behind the times, and its hotel was no exception. The register was a large, square book bound in old red leather, easy to grab, easy to swivel around, easy to open, easy to read. The hotel had no guests. According to the handwritten records, the last room had rented 7 months previously to a couple from California who had arrived in a private car and stayed 2 nights. Since then, nothing. No names that might have corresponded to single 20-year-old men, either large or small. No names at all. Reacher left the hotel without a single soul having seen him and got back in the Chevy. Next stop was 2 blocks over, in the town bar, which meant mixing with the locals.